So last time we were looking at Genesis, which is about a year ago, we went through the story of Jacob. But we can see now from the first couple of verses, we're transitioning from Jacob to the next part of the story. It says, this is the account of Jacob's family line. We're moving on to the next generation. And straight away, we read about Joseph. Now, Jacob had 12 sons. They've all already been mentioned by name earlier in Genesis. But as soon as we move into the next generation, Joseph is mentioned straight away because he's going to be the protagonist going forward. None of the other sons even get a name check in this passage. They're just referred to as the brothers or the other sons. And that's got to hurt. Not because they knew that in years to come the writer of Genesis would refer to them as the other sons, but because the reality was that in the father's eyes, they were just the other sons. That's got to hurt. And rather than keeping things low-key, realising that his brothers didn't like him due to this favouritism, if anything, Joseph seems a bit cocky about being the favourite. He could have said thanks for the robe Jacob brought him, but then decided to dress the same as the rest of his brothers, so as not to disrespect them. And after all, which one of us has never received a present of clothing from a relative, said thank you with the best smile we can muster, and then stuck it in the back of a wardrobe never to wear it? Some of us have suffered that more than others. But, you see, we can see later in the chapter, Joseph was wearing this robe when Jacob sent him out to see his brothers. See, it just doesn't look good to dress smarter than everyone else around you, does it? You see, Joseph, he was a snitch. He was out tending the flocks with his brothers, and he sent a father a bad report about them. No one likes a grass. And then there were the dreams, telling his brothers, most of whom were older than him, that they would one day bow down to him. It's not going to go down well. Even his father told him to shut up about his dreams. You know, the more you read the passage, the more you think, Joseph had it coming. I mean, maybe a smack in the face would have been enough. But the problem with that, we've already seen, he's a snitch. He'd be like, Dad, Zebulun punched me in the face and made my nose bleed. So his brothers, they had no choice really. Any action that didn't involve getting rid of Joseph would have seen him snitch on them. So they had to get rid of him. Now obviously, if you stop and look at what I just said logically, it's nonsense. It's ridiculous to say that the brothers had no choice. But we're good at that, aren't we? Convincing ourselves that we have no choice. Those lies that we tell ourselves to justify our behaviour and even convince ourselves we had to do something. But we always have choices. I'm straying into the passage for next week's sermon here, really, but it's hard not to, because there isn't actually that much to today's passage when you read it. Joseph's the favourite, his brothers don't like him. He has a couple of dreams they don't like, they like him even less. Let's have the notices and go get a drink. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Oh, tough. Deeper down, there is, of course, more to this story, but it can only really be understood in the context of the whole story of Joseph, because it's in seeing how Joseph acts and the choices that he makes throughout his life, we see the importance of who Joseph was right from the outset of his life. You see, for all of Joseph's braggadocio, he had something that his 11 brothers don't seem to show, and that's character. See, we often underestimate the power and the impact that our choices have on our lives. You don't have to make the same choice that many times in your life before a habit's formed. And neuroscience now shows us that our brains like efficiency rather than having to work hard. And there's nothing more efficient for a brain than a mindless habit. Our brains really just want to live on autopilot. And so we find ourselves living out habits that our choices have caused. Sometimes choices from many years ago that we can't even remember first making. And our habits are what make up our character. We see this in Joseph and his brothers. There were choices for the brothers, surely, long before they got rid of Joseph. Choices that brought them to a place where their character made them have no compunction about doing what they did. See, we can contrast that with how Joseph lived his life. And I'm going even further ahead in this story here, so spoiler alert. Joseph, he was diligent in his work, so he was put in charge of his master's household. His master's wife wanted to sleep with him, but he said no. Then he ended up in prison, but they thought so highly of him there that he ended up in charge of the prison, even though he was still a prisoner. And I know I joked about him being a snitch, But the reality of that is, he was the one brother who knew the difference between right and wrong. And as well as God's hand, of course, being on him, as we were told throughout Genesis, the thing that sees Joseph get where he gets to and to reach the fulfillment of those dreams he had was his character. If you look at today's passage, you see, I could have talked about dreams, but as I'm sure you all remember, I talked about them back in October. Just in case any of you have forgotten, I talked about following your God-given dreams and sharing them with other people and help them become reality. And as a result of that, some people shared their dreams with me, and I got to pray with some people about their dreams, and it was great. I want us to be a church of people who follow the kind of dreams that cannot be achieved without divine intervention. But I think that the story of Joseph shows us that the most important component of being successful in chasing our dreams is our character. The biggest risk in following dreams is that you can get so focused on success that everything else gets compromised in the pursuit of that success. Relationships with people, with God, even who you are as a person, can all be compromised for the sake of our dreams. See, the Bible tells us that God has a plan for each of our lives. But I believe that if we think that just means a plan for where we get to, where we go in life, what job we get, who we'll marry, whatever, then we miss the most important part of God's plan for our lives, which is who we are all becoming. To quote John Ortberg, if you have honesty, integrity and character, nothing else matters. If you don't have honesty, integrity and character, nothing else matters. God's main will for your life is that you become the kind of person that God can empower to do whatever you want to do. Or as Erwin McManus puts it, I think we really have to step up to the challenge to run as fast as our character is deepening and not as fast as our talent is expanding. God does want us to have dreams and desires we go after, but he wants us to do it rooted in being transformed by him. I'm speaking to myself as well, of course. That's the standard sermon disclaimer, isn't it, that all preachers use, which means we can hopefully ask some challenging questions without looking high and mighty. I'm not sure it actually counts as a proper sermon if you don't say that. So cross it off if you're playing sermon bingo. You think I'm joking about that, but someone has actually created an iPhone app called Big Church Bingo that lets you play bingo during sermons, and you cross things off that the preacher says to hopefully try and keep you awake and listening during the sermon. I prefer Sudoku myself, but each to their own. But seriously, my character isn't all I want it to be. I can relate to Paul when he says, I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. I'm sure we can all relate to that. And it's not wrong to feel like that. As far as I can see, there's only two ways not to feel like that. One is to be perfect, which is impossible. And the other is to have such a low standard for yourself that you can't not reach it, which is basically the definition of a sociopath. Or like Fred Flintstone when he's flicked angelic Fred off his shoulder and he's under the control of devilish Fred on the other shoulder. So how do we develop character? So if I were a motivational speaker, I'd take us back to this link between character and habits now and talk about how these habits make up our character and we need to break our old habits and create new ones to change our character. And then I'd spend the rest of this morning explaining to you my 5 or 7 or 18-step process to give you the character of Joseph. And an 18-step process isn't a joke. It's really out there if 7 steps aren't enough for you. But I'm not going to do that because I'm not a motivational speaker. I'd like to be a motivational speaker, but I can't be bothered. What are you going to do? There are a multitude of motivational and self-help books along these lines out there. Probably the most famous is Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which has averaged sales of more than 1 million copies a year since it came out in the 80s. With so many copies sold, you'd think everyone who wanted to read about habits and changing them would have done it by now. But apparently not, because one of the biggest and most talked about non-fiction books from last year was called The Power of Habit. It was a New York Times bestseller, although it may have helped that the author, Charles Duhigg, works for the New York Times. The fact that these books sell in huge numbers, though, shows that so many people, they feel this tension between who they are and who they want to be. and they want to learn this secret, this key that will unlock change in their lives. Many of these books, they are very good. I mean, I've read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I can tell you, it sold millions of copies for a reason. It's very good, and I would recommend it if it was something that interested you. But as useful as these resources can be, the reason I'm not going through a list of habits with you this morning is that if I tell you all that implementing certain habits can change your life, and then we all go about trying to set about doing it, then we'd probably see some success stories, but I'd be selling you short. There's something more important than habits, something so much more important that if we don't have it, then all the effort that we might put into developing these new habits will be limited. And we can see it again in this difference between Joseph and his brothers in the passage. Joseph was listening to God. Joseph didn't have two dreams that just happened to come true. They were prophetic dreams from God. Any of the other brothers could have been listening to God, but they weren't. You don't plot to kill your brother when you're listening to God. Your father maybe, but not your brother. See, this may seem like the most obvious thing to say, that as Christians we need to listen to God. You're probably thinking, why has he gone through all that just to tell us that we need to listen to God? I already knew that. It's a good job I had sermon bingo to get me through this. The thing is, though, it's usually the most obvious things that we need to hear the most. We do it all the time. We try and live as Christians without having any communication with God. If we were able to have an out-of-body experience and look down on ourselves at such times, we'd probably be thinking, how can I not see how ridiculous that is? But caught up in day-to-day life, with our lazy brains wanting to be stuck on autopilot, we manage to do this over and over again. Even while writing this sermon about the importance of listening to God, I've still managed somehow to neglect it. To quote Erwin McManus again, you can't just take some principles from Jesus and use them to try and be like him, because you can't be like Jesus without Jesus. If you try doing it without a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, then trying to be like Jesus will frustrate you, because you cannot be like Jesus without Jesus. Just as with habits, I'm not going to give you a list of steps to help you listen to God, because there is no universal one-size-fits-all solution here. We're all wired differently, and as a result, we hear from God in a variety of different ways. Some of you might need to go for a walk. Some of you might need to just shut yourself away in solitude. Some of you will need to put on a worship CD. Some of you will need to read something. Some of you will need to go to your animate place. Some of you will be thinking, what on earth is an animate place? If that's you, speak to Carl afterwards. See, God speaks to us in a multitude of ways, more than I can list. And he tailors how he speaks to each of us because he knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows how we're all wired because he wired us. And he knows how best to communicate with us. But we need to tune in to listen to him. A few years ago, Willow Creek Church created a survey for churches to use with their congregations called Reveal. It was designed to measure spiritual growth in a church, and part of it was looking at the different things that contributed to a person's spiritual growth. Perhaps surprisingly, they discovered that all of the various programs they put together didn't make any difference to people's spiritual lives. The only thing that made a difference was individuals taking personal responsibility for their own spiritual growth. Knowing that makes it kind of dispiriting being stood here preaching. Apparently nothing I say to this morning is going to have any effect on anyone's spiritual growth here. All you're going to take away from this is looking up big church bingo. So really, I'm wasting my time. But really, the reality of what that survey found is, if you want to grow spiritually, you can't rely on a church or other people. You can use wisdom and teachings from other people and all manner of godly teachers that will help you grow. But in the end, you have to take responsibility for it yourself. See, we can often convince ourselves that we don't have the time to slow down and stop and do whatever it takes for us to listen to God. But the exact opposite is true. We don't have time not to. Martin Luther once said, "I have so much to do today, I'll need to spend another hour on my knees." How might our lives change if we had that attitude each morning? See, this is the whole point of our year of worship, to focus on God. And as a result, that we should be drawing closer to him and taking on the character of God. We're studying Joseph as part of our year of worship to look at prophecy and Joseph as a prophet. And I haven't really done that particularly this morning. But I hope that as a result of this series, we will be seeing people using the gift of prophecy more. Paul told the Corinthians they should eagerly desire gifts of the Spirit, especially prophecy. If you desire the gift of prophecy or any other spiritual gift, then that's great. But the reason I didn't really look at prophecy particularly this morning is because I think we need to understand first, as Joseph did, that prophecy comes from God, and that if we want to exercise prophecy or any other spiritual gift, that we first need to draw close to God and take on his character. So I want to leave you this morning now with a challenge. So as I said, I'm not going to give you a list of habits to help you become a person of character. But there is one habit I want to help you to try out this week. Whatever it is that helps you get close to God, to get in that place where you can hear his voice, will you do that this week? Every day if possible. Because if you're willing to hear his voice and allow him to mould you into the kind of person that he created you to be, there's no telling what he can do through your life. Just like Joseph and his brothers, the choice is ultimately yours. I'll just close with prayer. Lord, I thank you that you want to speak to us, and that through the sacrifice of your Son, we're not only free to enter your presence, but that you welcome us in just as we are. I pray that each of us would do whatever it takes this week to draw nearer to you and to hear your voice in our lives. Amen.